Great to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller, and today we talk home renovation, repair, energy efficiency issues with Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison. It's a full-service residential remodeling company and a website, chadscarpentry.com. John Viner with us as well. John's a senior project manager for educational programs at the Energy Center of Wisconsin. They, too, have a website, ecw.org, and we'll mention those again as we go along through the program. But certainly, if you have a question about renovation, repair, maybe it's an energy efficiency question, I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. Chad, welcome back. Good to see you.
Thanks, Larry. It's great to be here.
And John, welcome back as well.
Yeah, thank you, Larry.
I had a question from an email question from someone who has a son who graduated a few weeks ago in Ag Energy Engineering Technology from the UW River Falls, looking at energy, really interested in energy conservation issues as they relate to things like home construction and retrofitting. Commercial construction. He's wondering, what about contact? How do you get into the field? What are ways to or contacts that a person might seek out?
Yeah, Larry, related to residential buildings, there are a number of national certifications that have been developed over the years that I would search out training providers for those types of certifications. So you get... You have a credential that you can carry around to show prospective employers. One training provider here are the administrators of Focus on Energy. That would be Wisconsin Energy Conservation Corporation. The national certifications come from an institute called Building Performance Institute, BPI. You can Google that and find who are the other training providers that are out there. Another great resource on the web would be the Residential Energy Services Network, ResNet, Residential Energy Services Network. They really are leading the pack nationally as far as some of the certifications related to inspection and building performance consulting, as well as some installations.
Okay. So get some certification there.
That really helps. And the technical college system is also, I know, certainly investigating and have residential construction courses. Now, somebody with a degree might look towards a little bit towards management or getting into the consulting role related to modeling energy use and performance on the residential side, but also there is a pretty large and growing market on the commercial end as well. A lot of larger buildings being built really want to scrutinize that energy use and performance before they start breaking ground. So that's a great place to search out as well.
And Chad, anything to add to that?
Well, the Green Built program, I think, also has some resources that might be useful. And I would also say, if this individual or others listening are interested in just getting some more hands-on experience, one resource would be to network through the Remodeling Association and other professional associations to make contacts with companies that are doing this sort of work and possibly seek employment through that sort of a path.
Yeah, so NARI would be...
That's correct.
National Association of Home Remodelers?
Is the Remodeling Industry.
Remodeling Industry, I'm sorry. And we should mention that there is an expo...
Yes.
Coming up this weekend.
This weekend, yes. I've spent the week really getting ready for it, and I'll be there all weekend and giving a couple of actually six seminars, but two different programs. And the expo is out in Middleton at the Marriott Madison West, which is just off the Beltline for those people familiar with the Madison area. And it will be Friday from 2 to 7. Saturday from 9 to 7, and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m.
So if you're thinking about remodeling and you're in the area, that would be a great place to go. I've been to the expo many times, and it's always really a great learning experience.
Yep.
Lots to see and do. And Ryan in Madison, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Ryan. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for having the program. I have a question. I'm remodeling my basement, and I want to build a wall right underneath the load-bearing I-beam, and I'm wondering how to attach the top plate to the I-beam.
Yeah, well, that's a good question. Often you can drill directly through one of the flanges on that beam and secure it with a couple of bolts. One thing that I would urge you not to do is to load up the wall. And what I mean by that is by building it tightly under that beam. That beam is designed for a little bit of deflection. You probably will do yourself a favor to simply let that wall be under the beam, but not firmly wedged between the cement floor and the beam itself. Because in effect, you'll be transferring the load from where it was designed to be, which is on the various posts, to that wall. And there's no footing or no footings under that wall. So that would be the one thing I would recommend you. You can mostly adhere it with a construction adhesive and just use a few bolts to essentially keep it from wandering.
All right. And then about the 8 inches from the two flanges. And if I want to run my my sheetrock straight up, how do I fill that void, that 8-inch void between the two flanges?
Yeah, you've got a couple of options, but generally we will just take some scrap wood and fill it up in a couple of places. You can put in a variety of blocking pieces. Again, you can glue them in. Mm-hmm. To give yourself something to nail to. It's not imperative that the wood that you put in there be continuous or fill up the entire cavity, but you just need a few places to essentially support the wallboard.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you very much for calling. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. On previous shows, another show here recently, the subject of humidity control in the home has really been the subject of a little bit of debate. I've gotten some emails back and forth on this following the show. We have callers suggesting a home humidity of around 25%. Others say that's too dry. What are your thoughts on it?
Well,
John, can you start with you?
Sure. We're all a little bit different in as far as beans and what we can withstand, what our comfort levels are. And the relative humidity really will fluctuate throughout the winter. So this idea of we're going to shoot for one relative humidity and that's what it should stay at and any fluctuation is an error or a mistake, it really is going to change because of a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
As the outside temperature drops and gets colder, air infiltration generally is going to dehumidify the house and often significantly enough where we don't have to dehumidifier in the winter. I know some people do run dehumidifiers in the winter, but
I know some people who run humidifiers in the winter, too.
People that run the humidifiers. So I do get calls on both ends of the spectrum. I have to run a humidifier or I have to run a dehumidifier in the wintertime. 40% relative humidity. So as we look at this range, if a house is well constructed, we have high quality parts, it can handle 40-45% relative humidity in the wintertime, and we won't get that window condensation to the extent where we have serious problems because we have high quality products and the house as a system is working appropriately. And it can be okay. The neighbor, the house next door, is going to have terrible problems at 40-45% relative humidity if they're working with single pane glass or keeping the temperature very cold. So as we try to save energy, we lower the thermostat. That can aggravate moisture problems. We lower the thermostat at night and the humidity levels go up.
Yeah.
Furnace comes on in the morning, our relative humidity levels go down. So it's constantly changing. In generic terms, that below 25% generally is pretty dry for us, and some will get nosebleeds, some will get sore throats. So that comfort level of 30-35% in the wintertime, some charts will go from 30 to 50%, but in Wisconsin, you know, these charts aren't made just designed for our little climate zone here, right? So 50% relative humidity, most homes aren't going to function well.
Yeah.
And I would just add to that that if you do need to add humidity to your home, it's good to consider doing it with a room humidifier, because the reason we add humidity to a structure is largely for human comfort, as John said. I mean, the structure can handle some fluctuations. We don't want the house to get too dry, but we certainly don't want it to be too wet either. Mm-hmm. So if comfort is the issue, I would recommend a spot humidifier that you're only operating when you're in the room, so that it's providing that humidity. Some people like to sleep with them. And again, you've got to be careful. My rule of thumb to our clients is generally, you know, if your skin is crawling and you've got to constantly put on the lotion, then maybe you're too dry. If you've got bad condensation on the windows, that's a good indication that the humidity is too high.
Humidity too high, or the glass temperature is too low.
Right.
And we don't know until we get there.
That's true. And on a on that night when it's you know, below zero, particularly on those nights when it's dropping, you know, 10, 20 below, you're going to see some condensation on the windows. Mm-hmm. That's just the laws of physics. So.
And as you were talking about the variability, if you've got you happen to have a fireplace and it's cold and you put the fireplace on, you're going to dry out. You're going to take a lot of humidity. I would assume you take a lot of humidity out of the air if you run an open fireplace.
Right. We're going to either gas or all that exhaust up the chimney draws the outdoor air in. Mm-hmm. And that's what's going to dry out that house.
So it's 25 is low.
That's the low end for most people. Some may be able to get away from that, but if we can hover around 30-35%, and not to say we won't have condensation, but hopefully it's not as bad where we're getting stains on our windowsills.
All right. Well, let's turn to Jerry in Wausau next. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Now, my question is on my cabin. I have major ice damming, and the reason is I have no ridge vents or any venting of any sort. A contractor told me about an idea, and I'll run it past you guys, that interests me. Taking off the shingles, laying down 1 inch of blue foam just for extra insulation, putting a 2x4 over that, laying half-inch decking over that, then tar paper and shingle. The trick here is that he's got a D-edge that has about a 4-inch drop along the faceplate, I guess I'll call it, that has venting cut into it. So thus, the air gap would travel up that boy to the ridge vent. To me, it sounds like it should work like a, you know, work with no problem. The insulation I do have on the cabin is in the rafters of the cabin, so because I have a cathedral ceiling. So I'm just wondering what your ideas is on that.
Ensuring that the insulation in the cavity within those rafters are is situated and working as designed. So if it's not filling the entire void or there's any types of gaps, we just need to know that that's going to work and is working as designed before we add additional insulation on top. It is a good approach. We can add 1 inch or 2 inches of foam on top of that roof sheathing and then build a space and have roof decking and our new roof system. Some will then create that space. When you lay down essentially the furring strips on top of the foam, you're creating a vent chute there where we're ventilating the underside of that new roof sheathing that you've installed. If we have a 2x8 or I guess even a 2x6 roof rafter that we're insulating, another approach would be to remove that roof, remove any, I'm going to assume that it's fiberglass in that cabin, fiberglass insulation in the roof rafters right now.
Yes.
And that has maybe over the years, maybe it has an effective R value of 3, let's say, per inch. And if you have 6 inches there, that's close to a 19 R value. If we just pull up the roof, the shingles, the sheathing, and we fill it with a spray foam, a closed cell foam that has an R value of 6 to 7 per inch, then we're getting up to a good R30 or better just within that cavity. And as importantly, we're making those cavities airtight if we get a good installation. And then we can forego, wouldn't necessarily have to install 1-inch foam on top of that, though I won't, you're just going to be making it better.
Yeah.
We've just been making it better to go on top. So before we address the roof, we have to make sure that that cavity is as insulated and airtight as possible, and then we go the extra measure above and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so I would agree with all that, and I would just add a couple of insights. The primary cause of ice damming is heat escaping. It is a common, I'm going to cause a little controversy here and say that it's common wisdom that venting is the problem with ice damming, and I would say that that is false. That while it is true that venting can solve or help mitigate ice damming, the cause of ice damming is heat escaping. And venting is actually a somewhat imperfect solution, which starts with the assumption that a house is leaky. So we have adopted this notion of venting as a cure because we're assuming the house is poorly air sealed, and thus we want to let that heat get out as quickly as possible before it starts melting snow. And it's really a very wasteful and I think a short-sighted approach to a problem. So the other thing that I would add is that the building science shows that houses that have unvented roofing in our climate, that the roof will, on average, lose about 6 months of its life, which is negligible for a roof that would be designed to last 20, 25 years.
Yeah.
Now, Chad, you're talking about maybe a cathedralized roof system versus where you have a flat ceiling and a vented an attic space.
Yes, I'm talking about this notion that when we have a cathedral ceiling and that we have to put these pockets for the air to flow. And then often they get insulated with the fiberglass batting, which is a very leaky system in practice. And so air is moving around all through that assembly, and it's getting up there to the roof deck and melting snow. And so we have a vent chute to try to get that heat out quickly, when really what we would be better off doing is packing that entire cavity full of cellulose, or as John said, better yet, a closed-cell foam. Or if there's enough space, an open cell foam. I mean, there are different approaches here, but if we can make it so that air does not move at all in that cavity, you're going to have a higher performance cabin or house building than if you put a lot of effort into creating a vent space.
Yeah, so often the industry looks first to ventilate the roof, then insulate, and then, maybe a little air sealing.
Right.
We want to reverse that.
Correct.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Jerry. Talking energy efficiency, home renovation, and repair today with Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry in Madison and John Viner with the Energy Center of Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You can join in if you have a question for our guests at 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Gary in St. Cloud, Wisconsin next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you. I was wondering if either of your guests could tell me anything about these high-efficiency electric, they call them furnaces, that are advertised on television, and apparently the only way you can look at them is shows or demonstrations at your more high-end hotels, like on a Sunday morning. They make them kind of look like they're magic in a box.
Yeah, well, that's your first clue right there, is that they're not magic in a box. And when somebody makes that statement, we really have to be cautious. There's really, seems like in the last 2 years, a lot of claims and advertisements for the magic heater, because everybody wants that magic heater. And it's really, I guess I just put the name debunked to that. I think it's about time that it's electric heat. Electric heat has a certain efficiency level. All types of heat produce a unit of heat called BTUs, and there's a cost associated with that per BTU. And regardless of how we package that heater or that type of electric heater, the cost is going to be the same. Really, the 40 to 50% energy savings and claims that you're going to see in advertisements, really to accomplish that types of savings in your home because you bought this magic box is, well, you're going to have to turn down your primary heat source and move that heater to a room and live there and not heat the rest of your house. So I wouldn't go there.
Chad, you're chuckling in agreement?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Magic in a box. What do you say?
All right. There you have it, Gary. Thank you. Bonnie and Madison, on to you. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We have a house that was built in 1925. It's been recently renovated. And on the in the third floor attic, currently we have batting, fiberglass batting with blown-in cellulose around the edge and a little bit of venting. So we are considering doing the closed-cell foam insulation, which I understand is very efficient, but I have some concerns about it. The first one is that I understand that it requires a fire retardant coating that will reduce the time. It will give you between 15 and 20 minutes before the insulation actually catches. But once the insulation catches, it's very flammable, and it would then produce a lot of toxic material. So one of my concerns is the flammability issue. The second question that I have is that it's a polyurethane, and I'm wondering if there's anything in the pipeline regarding future products that are more green, number one, but also don't have this flammability issue. I just can't, even though I would be getting perhaps much better heat efficiency, I'm not sure that I would be comfortable sleeping in the house where I knew that there was a significant flammability issue.
Okay.
We also have a lot of the house has been rewired, but not completely. So, you know, in some areas, there, even though the wiring up in the attic is new, I'm not sure about any other areas. So I have a major concern about the flammability. And I was wondering if you could comment on that type of insulation in general and tell me what's in the offing as far as maybe greener products.
Okay.
Jim?
Yeah. Well, I can shed some light on this, and I just wanted to ask for clarification. I kind of missed the first sentence where you were explaining, was it in the basement sill only that this was going to be applied?
No. It's going to be applied in the attic on the inside of the roof.
Okay, but in an attic that's a storage space, correct?
Right, but it's a walk-up area. So currently, I mean, the thing that brought this on, actually, is that we don't really have access to the storage area because the batting insulation is laid over the floor.
Right. Okay. Well, you know, it is true that the two-part spray-on urethane foam is a petroleum product. It is very flammable, or it when it does ignite at high temperatures, it will let off very noxious poisonous gas. And so when it is in a finished space or a part of the living space of the house, then it does have to be covered with some sort of flame retardant or something that is going to allow you to get out. Now, if your house is burning, obviously, I mean, one way to look at this is that once your house is burning, hopefully you're out of it. And so the reason that we have certain codes that force certain materials to be covered, whereas others can be exposed, in this case, we're concerned with the toxic impact of the burning material, and that's why the code forces us to cover it. And so it's just a safety precaution, the assumption being that you're going to get out of the house if it's burning. So it is common to use in a professional application of trying to improve your insulation, you're going to use that to air seal the perimeter, places where there are holes in the framing, where wires are coming through or plumbing penetrations. That product will be used to effectively help seal up the house. And then other products which are not toxic, like cellulose, is an excellent product. It's actually primarily recycled newsprint that has been treated to make it flame resistant or fire resistant and pest resistant. That product is fairly harmless and okay to leave exposed. So generally, we use a combination of materials to be able to accommodate all this. Now, as far as alternative products that are out there, there are some other foam products that can be used that are water-based that are that have less of those issues of flammability and volatile organic compounds and toxicity and all these other concerns, which are all legitimate and important. Right now, there are products out there. There's a soy-based foam. There are other water-based products that are out there. And the problem with some of those products is, and many of them are open-cell foam products, but there are some closed-cell products that are alternative. And the only thing that we just have to continue to look at is the overall package of performance. You know, is it actually delivering the same performance? Does it last?
Yeah. Bonnie, I would just add that, you know, the Focus on Energy program is going to have a great network of consultants that can come out and lend a hand as far as helping you guide you through the choice. Chad mentioned the soy-based foam and the isonine spray foam. Those are two that I would investigate that are being applied every day and can work fine in the home. It sounds like you're looking to make this walk-up attic a storage space. That's why your intent is to move the insulation from the floor to the roof rafters, right?
Yeah. What was the second product that you mentioned, the soy and
isonine.
How do you spell that?
Well, I don't know.
I-S-O-N-E-N-E.
Okay.
It's I-C-Y.
I-C-Y.
I-C-E-Y.
I-C-Y.
I-C-Y. Ison.
Okay.
N-E-N-E.
Okay. That's and close. What is the Focus on Energy program?
Are you in Wisconsin then, Bonnie?
Yeah, I'm in Madison.
You're right in Madison.
Right.
So
is this the one this weekend that you were talking about? Or
no, that's a great expo where you can find dealers and installers of these types of products at that expo this weekend. So that'd be a great source for you.
Yeah.
You can learn more about the Focus on Energy program at focusonenergy.com.
Okay. All right.
And they have a residential building performance program there where they have lots of trained, certified consultants that will come out to your house to do an analysis, provide tests and inspections, and write a work scope and help work with your contractor to get a complete job done.
Oh, okay, good. Well, right. I mean, my main concern is about this toxicity and the flammability. So I'm glad to have a source to look for where things may be going in the future.
Great.
Okay. Well,
all right. Thank you.
Been very helpful. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And we have some more calls. Let's go to Garrett in Madison next. Garrett, hello.
Hello. Thank you for doing the show.
Sure.
Let's see. I have a question about the use of roof rakes.
Yes.
It seems that most people rake what they can reach, which is about the first 6 to 10 feet of snow from the edge of the roof. When the snow cover is quite thick, does that create a new ice dam location that would be above the ice and water shield?
Not necessarily. For the most part, their benefit is had by getting the snow off the roof, though it's kind of our last resort or last plan of attack. Really, often the ice starts freezing at the eave. Uh-huh. Sometimes the attic space above our ceiling is, can stay warm enough or stay cool enough. No, excuse me, stay warm enough. It's going to melt that snow. And really, it's really cold at the edges and at the eaves. So we don't see ice dams, you know, 6 inches of ice in the middle of a roof system, 6 feet up. We see it start low and then it
works its way up.
Works its way up. The height of the ice dam may get 6, 8, 10, 12 inches, and then there's a pool of water. It's actually a puddle, and that's what gradually works our way up past that ice and water shield and finds its way in.
Though there are exceptions, and I was just looking at a few this week. When you have a Cape Cod or a bungalow where you've got walls that intersect the roof, sometimes if the insulation system is such that it goes in the floor of that knee wall area and then up the wall of the knee wall and then along the roof deck, what can happen is ice dams can form right there where the knee wall intersects the roof assembly. And I was observing that on an old home this week, and the homeowners had very... studiously raked the roof, but it, right around the point where the raking stopped is where the dam began. And of course, it was nice to be able to see it so clearly. It was a great kind of textbook example.
I don't know, Chad. You have to take a picture of that.
I did, yeah.
Something that can happen. All right. Thank you very much for calling, Garrett. Appreciate it. And we have Gene in Greendale, lives in a Greendale original, a concrete block house built in 37. These homes were one of Roosevelt's CCC projects. Our house has only a crawl space with a dirt floor beneath the house. We've insulated the attic, but can you give any advice about insulating our crawl space? Yeah.
Well, there are a couple of things. Probably the most important thing that should be done is to put down a continuous vapor barrier that is sealed to the surrounding walls. And what that will do is prevent or severely retard moisture rising from the soil into the house, and we can have things like radon, which is an additional potential threat to you as an occupant. But then just the moisture will cause problems for the home. And to be able to reduce that rising is very important. And then generally, we can just put down, if you actually want to insulate that floor, you can put down sheet products to insulate it. If you do that, oftentimes we're going to want to cover it over to protect it because it'll get damaged
over time, sure.
And generally the best way, frankly, to approach insulation is simply to insulate the walls on the perimeter from the inside, and generally with either foam board or spray foam. That's going to be the most effective way to insulate that space, because really the crawl space is no different than a basement with respect to strategies for making the house a higher performance home. So we're insulating that exterior wall first, making sure just to seal for moisture the floor. Then if you do want to insulate the floor, some sort of a foam product.
All right. Ted and Merrill, on to you now. Hi, Ted.
Hi there. This actually relates to a new construction and kind of ties in with your earlier discussion about humidity and ventilation. We're building new, and we've insulated and sealed it off. It's very tight. So, of course, the concern is what to do with the moisture, how to manage that. And what we're looking at is an HRV, and the question then comes is, do you need to, have an additional exhaust fan in the bathroom, to mitigate that moisture, or is the HRV going to do it, assuming it's all sized right and you've got everything run right?
Yep, good question. It's done both ways. Some will choose simply the HRV and let that run 24 hours a day. Some will have that on a timer. I think my personal preference is to have an additional exhaust fan that is able to exhaust at a higher volume as needed, though there are some HRVs that may have a booster switch where it hums on a very low speed to throughout the day. And then as you go into shower, you can hit a booster button that ups the speed. So that would be a minimum feature on an HRV that you would need. I like the additional boost of an exhaust fan that's dedicated to move exhaust and moisture out as needed. But it isn't always necessary.
Okay.
Yeah, the main concern with it is just that once you kick that on, especially this time of year, you're simply, dumping your heat right into the, right outside and, losing a lot there. But that disadvantage is maybe overcome by getting rid of the moisture faster.
Yeah, absolutely.
You shouldn't be losing your heat, though, would you?
Well, just pulling indoor air out. So you've conditioned that air inside. He's staying that, it may cost you a few cents, but it's negligible for when you want to remove that moisture and drive it down because you got window condensation or a little bit of moisture symptoms showing up on a wall someplace, you can do that.
Okay.
All right.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Bill wonders, is there any ways to finish a shop wall paneled with OSB?
Well, I suppose you could. OSB is a interesting material. Essentially, it's a chipboard material that's taking advantage of scraps from the milling process. And so for years, we've thought of this as a very green product because it is made from essentially waste material. However, it has some drawbacks. There are some pretty powerful resins and glues in that with some volatility. It's generally thought of as an exterior sheeting product as a result of that because it's not the best thing to be breathing. And if you spend any time with a bunch of cutoffs of OSB in a sealed environment, you'll start to really smell the formaldehyde and other things that are in it. And it also, the various finishes that are applied to it to keep it from completely delaminating also tend to make it very effective as a vapor barrier, which is often not what you might want in a given location. So that's just another concern.
So as you, sounds like a shop existing, OSB on the inside, you can screw sheetrock to it or something if they wanted to finish it off, something as simple as that? I mean, that finished surface?
Yeah, though it sounded like he was looking to finish it with that material.
No, I think the OSB was already there.
Okay.
Yep, screw sheetrock to it.
Oh, yeah, well, that's true. I'm sorry. I misunderstood the question. Sorry.
All right, let's take some more calls here. We'll take some more calls in just a minute. Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison. John Viner of the Energy Center of Wisconsin. Our guests here as we talk home renovation, repair, and energy efficiency on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Have an open line or two. We'll get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. Scott emailed, do you foresee any dollar assistance being provided by the federal government to have the energy audits done on a person's home? Is there anything in the stimulus or energy conservation programs that would provide an incentive or subsidize part of the audit? How about dollar help with insulating, et cetera, from the federal government?
Certainly unclear. There's nothing definite. I see. My guess would be that there would be additional incentives for the products and the installation services, whether it can be applied to the audit. I think that's probably has less of a chance. A lot of stimulus dollars, I think, will be applied towards workforce training, creating jobs, apprenticeships, and education. I think there's that is pretty clear in trying to create jobs for the industry. Likely, we're hoping that incentives for homeowners to complete more work will come about and help drive jobs in the energy auditing business as well as the installation business. There is a lot being discussed about the need for people to weatherize appropriately, but they're also going to need remodeling skills, a whole host of construction and health and safety issues, and a lot of training that goes along with that so that we have a workforce ready and trained for if the incentives do hit the ground.
And we have here from Bobby in Greene County. My daughter and her husband are considering buying a small house that's a one-story built on a concrete slab. It was built in the mid-50s, has radiant heat in the concrete floor. What should they be asking regarding the heat? The only thing visible is the floor is sunk a bit. You can see the concrete around the perimeter of the rooms is a bit higher, she says. Is radiant heating system that's over 50 years old risky? Who would they contact for an impartial assessment?
Yeah, I assume it's going to be a boiler system and water radiant heat versus an electric heat in that slab. FocusOnEnergy.com and the consultant network certainly can come out and lend a hand, certainly at the time of sale or looking to purchase a house. I think in addition to a standard home inspection that you might think of, this building performance analysis provides, I think, a level of detail that's not there in the home inspection industry. And they're able to really provide work scopes and recommendations and work orders and get down to the details of steps to take. So that's through the Focus on Energy program. Something that we would look, if we're going to buy the house, is simply at the energy bills. And MG&E does have some comparison, some cost comparisons of similar size houses. You can look from you can look up an address and look at average energy use for most homes in the Madison area, and it'll give you a good perspective on whether this is a high user or a low user.
All right. And Patricia in Middleton says, can you point me to any Madison area or statewide professional organization listings of insulation contractors that can be considered trustworthy?
Yeah, I think this is, there's certainly in the Madison area and throughout the state, and we're going to fall back to the network that's been created through the Focus on Energy program and Home Performance with Energy Star. It's a national branding, and Wisconsin has their brand of Home Performance with Energy Star. That these contractors and consultants, they go through quite a series of training, mentoring, and oversight and quality control through the Focus on Energy program. So that's going to be the first place to start. Anybody, one, looking to get into the business to help grow their business, or homeowners looking to provide trustworthy or hire trustworthy contractors and consultants. I'm not going to name a number of them off the top of my head, but I think that that's the network to start with.
Yeah, and I would just add that the best, you know, $350 to $450 that a homeowner will ever spend if they're thinking about upgrading the energy efficiency of their home is to have that energy audit done. And with that, you are going to get not only all that expert advice on what should be done after the assessment is completed, you will, as John just alluded to, be kind of connected to recommended insulators and other professionals to do the sorts of improvements that are being recommended. And then once the project is done, the post-test, which is a thorough assessment of what was accomplished, is free. And it actually pays you back because not only do they come and look carefully at the work that my company or other companies have done, but they're then going to give you probably some cash rewards through the Focus program that, you know, will be a check that comes in the mail that rewards you for having made investments which have been then confirmed to actually be doing something to reduce your energy consumption.
Hmm. Lillian in Richland Center, we're on to you now. Hi, Lillian.
Hi. I have a stick built a ranch-style home, and I do have vents in the roof. And there's an exhaust fan in the attic that works in the summer. It's like on a thermostat because I hear it go on. And there's a switch in the garage that I can turn it off in the winter. Do I need to turn it off in the winter? I've never heard it running in the winter.
No, if it's on a thermal switch and that thermal switch is functioning as it should, it's going to keep that off. Maybe that thermal switch might come on at 90 degrees, let's say, and in the summertime, or excuse me, in the winter, it's not going to get that hot up there to come on. So if you're not hearing it, I think that you're probably safe with not shutting it off.
Sure.
So if there's a comfort level, hitting the switch is easy too.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, Lillian. John in Milwaukee. Hello.
Hi. While I was waiting, I thought of another question, but my original question was about ice shields and the material that they use. Would it be worthwhile to put an ice shield up over the whole roof when you're re-roofing a home? Because those nails go, it's an older house, and I'm thinking of protecting against potential leaks.
Well, it is something that can be done. What you gain by using an ice and water shield is every penetration through that, every nail that attaches the roof system will be sealed. And so that will help to assure that water leaks are not happening at those various spots. But then, you know, all the details have to be right with respect to vapor barriers, because you're then really putting a vapor barrier up on the roof deck with that system in a way that, say, traditional tar paper will be a little bit more tolerant if there's some moisture in the building system that needs to be expelled. So, like many things in high performance building, the answer is always a little complicated. But I would not counsel against it. I don't know if John has a different opinion on that.
Yeah, we can make these homes work without going all the way up with the ice and water shield if we have a quality contractor with the right processes. Though I've known that those that have taken that step, and there's a nice level of comfort when you do so. So that investment is just provides a level of comfort and guarantees. And if that's what you're comfortable with, I don't think anything's going to go wrong with that strategy.
Oh, yes. And then the ridge vent might help take care of some venting also.
Yeah, as long as we have venting low on the roof as well to begin with, and it sounds like you did, so we just don't add a ridge vent and negate the other types of vents that should be in place. So adding a ridge vent is great. Unless we're adding it and there's no other venting in its place, then we don't have the system designed or installed appropriately.
All right. There you have it. Thank you for calling. Vince in Madison, on to you. Hi, Vince.
Hi there. I just want to call and say, you know, I'm really enjoying this program. I, myself, have started up a weatherization business here in Madison Metro, and this is just fascinating stuff to me. And I was just wondering if I could maybe give a shout-out to my business and a quick phone number, if that would be okay.
Sure, go ahead.
Well, the name of the business is All Season Weatherization, and my phone number is area code 262-745-9030. And I just want to quick add that my personal home, I have a foot of snow on my roof right now, and there's no snow on my neighbor's roof and big icicles. So this stuff is, well worth doing. I can see the results before my eyes.
Oh. Thanks for calling. And there are good results. You do it right.
Yep, absolutely. It's in the detail. And just need to keep that in mind. And if we're connected, I'm not sure if All Seasons is connected with the Focus program, but if you're not, certainly take a look.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Jan says, I'm allergic to brands of home insulation sold in building centers. Do you know of a more green insulation, and can you recommend a source of this material in Wisconsin?
Well, there are a few things out there. There are formaldehyde-free fiberglass insulations, though I generally would counsel you to stay away from that. If you do insist on working with a BAT insulation product, there are some cotton insulation products that are available. And I have to confess that my staff takes care of acquiring that material. I'm not sure where we get it, but there are some local sources for the cotton. I think
it's made from recycled denim, so it's a recycled product and nice cotton bat that can work fine. I think certainly for those with chemical sensitivities, a bat insulation, a new product, also is a cellulose bat they have these days. So it's relatively new, but I did see it just the other day.
Maybe something that'll turn up at the NARI Remodeling Expo. And
maybe
coming
so.
Could be. We'll be back with our guests in just a minute here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking home renovation and repair issues and energy efficiency as well with our two guests today, Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, and John Viner, Senior Project Manager for Educational Programs at the Energy Center of Wisconsin. Pleased to have these guys with us, and join in with your questions and comments. 800-642-1234. John, you're in charge of educational programs, and I know you do a lot of training yourself and have others working for you in training. Mm-hmm. Anything coming up?
Yeah, absolutely. The Energy Center of Wisconsin is always busy providing the training and education out there for generally, they're seen as contractor-based for the workforce, people getting the work done. But I really want to encourage homeowners out there that I know you're out there that are pretty intelligent about how your house works, and you've done your research on products, on installation techniques, that a lot of our trainings, I think, would be of value to you. Air sealing and insulating, right? These are generally getting a contractor audience, but there's no reason that you couldn't attend and sign up for these. We have one on residential roof technology. Actually, next week, one's in Milwaukee on the 20th and Madison the 21st. So we have the National Roofing Contractors Association doing a roof training for us, just looking at the history of roofs and best practices and preventing failures and solutions to get around those. And then in early February, there's an advanced air sealing one in Kakana and Minocqua. Really, the highlight of our training series is the Better Buildings, Better Business Conference in Wisconsin Dells. That'll be March 3rd and 3rd through the 5th. And that really gets, well, we have about 900 remodelers there last year. So it's a really Wisconsin-grown conference that draws a wide audience from across the nation to present and attend. So that's also highly recommended and can be found at ecw.org.
So just go to ecw.org for all of the information on that. And then again, just to mention the NARI Remodeling Expo for 2010. And Chad, I tell you, you're going to get, if you're interested in any kind of remodeling at all with your home, you're going to find people there to help you.
Yeah, it's really a great opportunity for homeowners, because not only will you get to see a lot of beautiful photos and products, but you'll get to talk to literally dozens of remodeling contractors and subcontractor specialists. Anything that you're thinking about doing, you have an opportunity this weekend to come in and talk to us and you know, decide who you might want to call this year or some year down the road if you want help, or just get some good professional advice if you're a do-it-yourselfer. There are a lot of great seminars. I think there are 60 seminars being offered this weekend, and you can go online to remodelingmadison.org for the NARI website, where there's a lot of information on this weekend's expo.
2 to 7 on Friday, 9 to 7 on Saturday, and 10 to 4 on Sunday. So at the Marriott Madison West. So there you have it. Robert in Whitewater, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Robert. Thank you for calling.
I plan on installing some fiberglass insulation on an attic wall, which the channels are between 2x4s, and I would like to use an R19 fiberglass, which is about 6 inches thick, meaning I'd have to compress it quite a bit to get it in those channels, and I'm wondering if that's if that will affect the R value of the insulation, or whether one would be just as well going with an R15, which isn't quite as thick. In other words, does compression affect the R value?
Okay.
Yes. It does affect the R value, and we have that 3.5-inch space in that standard stud cavity. So one approach that I might recommend would be you could go with an R11 bat in the stud cavity as normal, and then fasten and then hang another R11 bat horizontal to that across the backside of that knee wall. So you're actually kind of crisscrossing. You got the first bat in the cavity that you'd standards would see, then install R11 bat horizontal, and then I would cover that on the backside to the attic, use a house wrap like Tyvek or Tipar or a couple of brands that come to mind to really get that performance of that insulation system. We don't want the cold attic air to swipe and wash across the backside of that open-faced fiberglass bat. So both bats are open-faced, no craft paper on them, one vertical, one horizontal, and then wrap the backside with a house wrap is one of many approaches.
All right. There you have it. Thank you for calling. And on to Wenzel in Amherst. Hello to you. Thank you for calling.
Yeah. Hi, Larry and guests. I'm planning on tearing a low ceiling out of a lean-to addition on a house. And I haven't really inspected it yet, but the intended plan to get some more headroom in that room would be to kind of follow that lean-to-er line, and I'd have to restud it in some way or other. And I was just curious how you do that to get the proper vapor barrier and insulation and all that in after you've reframed it, so to speak.
This is part of your living space now, this lean-to?
Yes, it's the kitchen.
Okay. Well, I think whether you were to simply gut the space you have or to enlarge it in some way, you're still going to want to apply the basic principles of insulating, which is to completely air seal all the penetrations in the framing prior to insulating it. You can do that with a caulk or with a foam, and then fill the cavities with insulation. And then, ideally, if you apply some sort of a vapor barrier, I would recommend one of the higher-tech vapor barriers that will allow some permeability, like one product called Membrane. But that would be what you would do, and I think that was the question.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for calling. And Lillian in Richland Center, hello.
Hi. I called before about the fan in the vent in the attic. I had a second question. I have some lines on the paint on the outside wall in one of my rooms, and I wondered how can this be prevented from occurring again?
Do you have candles that you use in the house?
No.
No candles, so I'm trying to think what the shadow is, kind of shows up on.
Well,
where
it's just in one area. Mm-hmm. near something that heats, like one of those brick storage units that heat.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but I don't know I don't know exactly when it showed up. I guess it's just that I've been hesitating to repaint it with those on there, thinking it'll happen all over again. I got to find out
Yeah, I'm not going to be able to solve that over the radio here. That's going to take somebody to come out and take a look, and that's certainly highly recommended so that we identify that source of that dark staining. Often what we'll call ghosting or dark staining on walls can be soot from a combustion process, could be from a heater, or that's why I ask, candles, or a gas fireplace, or a wood fireplace that has not quite drafted appropriately, the exhaust, or maybe on startup of a wood stove, we got some smoke odors, which is going to put soot into the house, for example. So all these things would need to be investigated, and certainly highly recommended to do so. And I would look at to focus on energy for the network of consultants to do that for you.
All right. There you have it. Thank you, Lillian, for calling. Is it possible to paint a rubber roof with a lighter color to minimize heat from the sun? Yeah. Or is it worth it? That is the question.
Yeah, I guess I assume this is a residence and it covers a fair portion of the home in a cathedralized ceiling, or maybe not. I'm not sure. Often the cooling load or the cost for cooling in Wisconsin may not justify that step to really get the benefits that we might think. And the resources that you're going to put into trying to paint that black roof may be better spent elsewhere, would be my initial thought.
And we've never done it, so I couldn't comment on how effective it might be.
Carl in Sparta, we're on to you now. Hi, Carl.
Hi. My reason for calling is we have, my wife and I, a couple of years ago, purchased a cabin. And it was, it's the walls are round. They're about 12 inches thick, solid wood for the most part. The walls were built from the trusses that were used to build the railroad tunnel, which is just down the road a ways from where our cabin sits. Anyway, my question is, I was listening to the portion of your show that referred to the foam spray in for insulation, and one of the issues that we're concerned about is we use that. We sprayed the outside of the walls, put 2x2s on, and then put OSB on the outside, and then used cedar shakes to cover them. And our concern is, at this point, after listening to the show, is any kind of toxicity issues, because we also used the same material to spray in the ceilings of the rafters up there.
Okay. Well, I think that you've used the foam, I think, in a great application. You have a unique wall system, and then you put that insulation to the outside of that wall system. And then you have it, you have furring strips, and you have a back-vented cladding or siding, which is perfect. That's a great strategy, and I wouldn't be concerned about the toxicity of that foam on the exterior of my wall, or even if we have a great assembly in the ceiling where that foam is to the outside and it's covered with a the appropriate fire protection barrier with sheetrock. I think the codes are in place for health and safety, and if it meets the code requirements there, I wouldn't be concerned with it myself.
Okay. My concern was when we put the roof on, that was all new construction. Basically, I think they were 2x10s and 16 on center. And I did have sprayed-on insulation put in there, and then I did put fiberglass. Did I miss something there?
So you used the spray foam as a skim coat on the underside of the roof deck, it sounds like.
Yes.
And then filled the rest of the void with fiberglass.
Yeah.
That system can work. So there's no attic space, and then it's sheetrock, and it's a cathedralized ceiling.
Yes.
Yep. And it's hard to say. Often that system can work just fine. Some in other applications, for example, if you had a dozen recessed lights above your kitchen and you boil lots of water when you cook and prepare a dinner, all that moisture go through the recessed lights and still condense on that skim coat of foam up there if it's cold enough. So that's one scenario where it may not work. But there are lots where the system could work. And it really, nobody's going to know until we do a little visual investigation and keep an eye on it. But if you don't have symptoms, I wouldn't really recommend a big investigative procedure.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Here's Lawrence with Water heater question. My water heater is failing. Need to replace it. I've recently had insulation work done, and an energy consultant is recommending going with power vented or condensing units. My current unit is atmospheric. Contractors are recommending high efficiency one. A few models are rated at 90% or higher. With some tax incentives, I would defray some of this cost, which is much greater on these units. Could you talk about some of the merits and features of these units and what you're recommending for your customers?
Well, you definitely are wise to get rid of that old atmospherically vented water heater, because those are really designed for old leaky houses, and they just shouldn't really be installed in a home that has been weatherized in a significant way. The reason for that is that the chimney, which is a, you know, open air to the exterior, will start to become the fresh air supply for the house if we seal it up tightly and then start venting bathroom fans and dryers and other things that are sucking air out of the house. And very frequently we have houses that get remodeled and are made more energy efficient and tighter, but nothing is done to bring in fresh air. And that old chimney is a very effective source for the fresh air. So it's good that you're headed in this direction. I'm not aware of any water heater that's 90% efficiency. Even the instant hot water heaters, I think, generally have an efficiency rating of about 85-86%, I believe.
Yeah, that's close. I think the higher efficiency, they have a thermal efficiency near that 90%. There are some tank units that are out there. And I think one application for that might be because they have such a high recovery, not only the efficiency is there. So if we have lots of teenagers or lots of showers and watering going on, I think the high recovery rate certainly is advantageous in that case. I'm personally typically is recommending that power vented, that at least meets the energy efficiency requirements of the Focus on Energy program, which I'm sure you are aware of, that 0.64 energy factor or greater. Taking the step up above and beyond that, I think there's certainly value and savings to be had, but I think the biggest benefit is going to be that quick recovery.
All right. Let's turn to Mike in La Crosse. Mike, hello.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, this is kind of a basic question, but my wife and I, the kids all moved out of the house a few years ago. We bought a small bungalow that was built in the 30s right in the middle of town. We're kind of doing a 5 to 10 year plan on redoing it, and this year we're up to insulation and windows. We were thinking we could pull the top layer of steel siding off and maybe blow in insulation, and I'm looking for advice on what we should do and what we should look for in windows.
Well, if you're re-siding the home, are you
re-siding?
You're not. Okay. So you'll remove some of that siding to be able to blow it in. Is that
right?
Correct?
Yeah.
Okay. And then the wiring system from the 30s, I take it, it's probably...
It's rewired. It's
rewired.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, we've been doing it one step at a time. It's the plumbing's been redone, the wiring's been redone. We have a high efficiency furnace in there and a new roof. Now it's time to do the insulation and the windows.
Okay. Well, I would say that since you've taken care of rewiring the house so that we don't have to worry about knob and tube wiring, which is not rated for having insulation contact, it's an excellent opportunity to have the walls filled with the dense pack insulation. You do have a number of options. There are some, the most common is a cellulose product that is used, and I do recommend a dense pack product if you are going to have something blown into the walls that's a material. There are some expanding foam products now available that can be injected into those walls, and I don't personally have much experience with that. We've priced it for some projects, but we haven't had anyone do it. It does price out a little bit higher than a traditional dense pack application. For windows, the one thing that I would recommend that you consider doing is the because you're doing insulating in windows, I would recommend the home performance evaluation, because you're going to get that oversight, whether you do it or whether you have a contractor do it. You're going to get to really figure out how leaky those old windows are. I have occasionally talked a client out of replacing their windows just because the discovery is made that, you know, those windows really aren't that leaky. There are a lot of good reasons to replace windows, but often quick payback on energy cost is not one of them. And so you should go into that eyes wide open. And I would counsel you to stay away from the inexpensive vinyl window insert. I know vinyl windows have come a long way, and it is by far the least expensive way to replace a window opening. But I still have a lot of concerns about long-term performance of the product itself. Vinyl tends to get UV damaged, and I like to think of a window as something you replace every 50 years, not something that you replace every 10 years. And after all, the windows you're taking out have been there for 70 years. So right. My experience is that if you go with a high quality fiberglass or wood and aluminum product, you can get another 50-year window put in there.
Yeah, and just make sure it meets the federal tax credit incentive level, which is based on the U value. And the solar heat gain coefficient, I think, now becomes a criteria. So certainly the U value, we're looking at 0.30 or 0.32, depending on the solar heat gain coefficient. There's actually a little flexibility there, but it is 0.30, and if you can document that, then we've got a pretty good federal tax credit. The state program for your wall insulation has $200 incentive. Again, if you bring in that building performance consultant, that'll cost you some money up front, but certainly money well spent just on the analysis. And of course, the icing on the cake is you're going to get several hundred dollars back from the state for doing so.
Okay, where do we find this consultant? Would they be in the Yellow Pages or?
We would go to focusonenergy.com would be the source, and you can look up the tab for residential homes or home improvement, and then you can search the consultant by zip code. Or county, so you can get the list.
You're in La Crosse. There are certainly people in La Crosse who do
this. Yeah, there's an old-timer or two over that direction.
I'm one of those old-timers myself.
So. All right, good luck to you, Mike. Thank you
very much.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling. And, guys, thank you so much. The time, I can hardly carry this pile of emails that we've still got here, but you know, that's kind of the way it goes. And I want to remind people we've got the Remodeling Expo this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Marriott Madison West. Take a look at that if you're interested in remodeling. And, Chad, your website is chadscarpentry.com?
That's correct.
chadscarpentry.com. And, John, you've got all those training sessions coming up and a lot more on your website is... And it's ecw.org.
.org, correct.
ecw.org. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you.
Look forward to your next visit. Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, and John Viner, Senior Project Manager for the Energy Center of Wisconsin, our guests. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.